With the Now Jobs app, you're only 3 clicks away from a new student worker. Let us introduce you to the Now Jobs app. That's extra help in just a few clicks. No fuss, no administration. Download it now. Available in Belgium, the Netherlands, France, and soon in Germany.
Now Jobs. Get the job done.
Ka-ching!
Some podcasts do it for the fun. Some do it for the fame. Chad and Cheese, they do it for global effing domination. That's right, bringing America to its knees was just the beginning. Now, they have their eyes set on conquering Europe. And they've drafted industry veteran Leven von Neuerhauser of Belgium to help them navigate the old country and bring HR's most dangerous podcast across the pond to trash talk like never before. Not safe for work in any language. The Chad and Cheese podcast does Europe.
Oh, yeah. Germany will have a new chancellor this month. That's always worked out pretty well, right? You are listening to the Chad and Cheese podcast does Europe. I'm your co-host, Joel Maginoline Cheeseman.
And I'm Chad, vaxxed and relaxed, so wash.
I'm still just leaving.
On this episode, Google's mantra used to be don't be evil, but breaking the law might be a better one today. Giggers are starting to be recognized as employees in the old country, and diversity recruiting isn't just an American thing. And speaking of diversity, we have 4 middle-aged white men on today's podcast.
Score!
Let's party like it's 1957, shall we?
Europe has a bunch of countries in it.
European. Talent. Intelligence. What does it mean? Imagine a world where it's easier for you to find and know your target group. Where it's easier to recruit and attract the talent you need from a European talent pool. Every year, thousands of corporate recruiters, HR departments, and intermediaries rely on Intelligence Group to make that dream a reality. Intelligence Group is the European market leader in recruitment talent intelligence. With innovative dashboards and tailor-made research in 28 European countries. It is our job to empower you as a state-of-the-art, data-driven recruitment business partner. Recruiting with data is great. Recruiting with Intelligence Group is better. Learn more about our services at intelligence-group.nl. Intelligence Group, market leader in European talent intelligence.
We have a mystery guest, right? This week?
Yes.
Okay. Straight out of Europe, kids. Straight out of the UK. Straight out of Scotland at 27 stones. I don't even know what that is. How heavy is 27 stones?
Weighing in at 32 pints. He's that British guy. Matt Alder, everybody.
Right.
Yeah. 27 stones is a lot more than I actually weigh, just to set the record straight at this point.
How much is a stone? I don't understand. What does a stone weigh?
I don't know what it is in newfangled weights and measures, I'm afraid.
Well, then let's get to who you are, Matt, for those who don't know.
Absolutely. I'm Matt Alder, and I am the host and producer of the Recruiting Future podcast, which is a proud member of the Evergreen HR Podcast Network, like the Chad and Cheese Show. Unlike the Chad and Cheese Show, my podcast is very safe for work.
And everybody loves Matt Alder. Let's just say that. There are plenty of people who don't like Chad and Cheese, that's for sure.
He's very British and hard to dislike.
Yes, he is.
If you will. Shall we get to shout outs?
Yeah, my first shout out goes to you, Joel. Are you ready?
Oh, I like that.
How does it feel to be in the most backward country in the civilized world right now? The U.S. is at 54.5% vaccination. The U.K., represented by Matt Alder, 66%. Belgium, represented by Leven, 72%. And Portugal, 80%. Are you fucking kidding me, US?
Come on. The last I heard, the entire continent of Africa was like 1% vaccinated. So I take a little offense to that. Okay. Dis Africa while you're at it. That's nice. That's nice. That's all right. That's all right.
My shame.
That's all right. I'm gonna trade in my shout outs for two questions this week. I'll ask the first one and then you guys.
Let's ask the judge. Is this allowed? Okay. He says it's okay. Go ahead.
I don't know who the judge is. It's our fucking show. Anyway. So my first question is, and I mentioned it in the beginning, is that Germany is getting a new chancellor, which means Zippo to most Americans. But Germany is the biggest economy in Europe, yes, as far as I understand. So I want to ask the Europeans, what does Germany getting a new chancellor, what does Angela Merkel leaving mean to Germany? What does it mean to Europe, particularly from an economics perspective? Who do you guys expect to win? What's going on in Germany?
Mats, do you have a clue? I don't.
I'm not a close follower of German politics, to be perfectly honest. And I think this kind of underlines the fact that Europe is a lot of different countries. So whilst, we completely understand the significance of the German election and the significance of the German economy within Europe, I couldn't really tell you much about who the runners and riders are.
Okay, now I'm going to call out Europe then, because Americans get a lot of shit for being stupid and not caring about the rest of the world and not caring about anyone but ourselves. And now you two Europeans come on our show and don't know shit about the German election, the biggest economy in your continent. So as an American, like, that says a lot. Like, we're not as bad as Europe. Maybe we're a lot alike, which is sort of the whole point of the show, is how similar we are. Quit bashing America, Europe.
That's it. It's just so easy right now.
You're so happy we didn't know about the German politics.
I'm surprised. I thought you guys would be able to tell me more about American politics than I would. And the fact that you don't even know what's going on in Germany is sort of heartwarming as an American.
I can probably tell you more about American politics than I can about German politics right now. I do have a shout out, though. I would like to shout out to Scotland. The Scottish government announced a couple of weeks ago that they are going to trial a 4-day working week in some parts of the public sector. So
that's awesome.
That's exciting news.
Yes.
Does that include podcasters?
I already work 4 days anyway, so they're just catching up with me.
Chad won't let me work 4 days a week.
A oh, yeah, because you only work two.
Lies.
Works 4 days, man. It's really, really busy.
Lies.
Yeah, I've got a shout out too. And this time I'm going to shout it out. My shout out goes to Ivan De Witte. He's the president of my favorite soccer team, AA Ghent. And according to newspaper The Tate, he's about to sell his HR company, Hudson, for the second time. And actually, I thought it's an interesting story. He founded De Witte & Morrell in 1982, sold it to EY in 1995. EY sold it to TMP Worldwide in 2001. And then in 2003, TMP was split up in Monster and in Hudson. De Witte & Morrell was merged with Hudson, and Monster was sold to Randstad. And now Ivan bought his company back in 2018 for a dime. And now at age 73, he's selling the company back again to Randstad.
Yes.
So they probably feel they bought the wrong part of TMP in 2016 and want to make up for it. And I think they're going to Monster again.
I think that's what we call in America, double dipping.
Double dip, baby. Whew. And while we're talking about double dipping, so the 1st of July of this year, the rules of paternity leave in France have changed. Now, new fathers are entitled 25 days leave. That seems pretty awesome to me. I don't know why we can't all get 25 days leave.
Why not make it 50?
Yeah, Canada's insane. Canada's like 6 months or something. Canada's like equal to the woman, which sounds really sexist, and we'll probably get canceled with that comment. But how many days it is in America? Zero.
Okay, so first off, again, just biologically, I've never carried a baby or performed a labor, but it feels damn hard. So you would think that mom would want some time off or at least a little bit of a break. if dad's going back to work as soon as humanly possible, that just doesn't seem good for the family overall. And I don't know, maybe divorce rates. Is this something that we see in Europe as kind of like a standard, or are the French kind of like leading in parental leave for men? Do you guys know?
Yeah, it's different in every country, but it's, you know, the principle is fairly standard. So in the UK, you actually have shared parental leave. So you can, either parent can kind of sort of switch in and switch out. So you can kind of share the time between you.
And everywhere it's all government mandated, right?
Yeah.
Whereas in the US, it is not.
Freewheeling, capitalism, if it doesn't get paid, fuck it.
So I'm going to get to my next question. So of my two questions, one is of global importance and the other sort of light and airy. I'll let the listeners figure out which question is which. But I have a question for our stylish European guests. I hope you've seen this. Facebook is launching new glasses. Smart glasses, if you will. They've partnered with Ray-Ban. You guys remember Google Glass?
Oh my God.
You probably remember Snapchat's lenses or whatever they had. And now Facebook is coming out with their version, which they've probably backed up the Brinks truck to Ray-Ban's headquarters, Luxottica or whoever owns them. Anyway, I know that I'm not going to wear them in America, but I don't have the fashion sense that you Europeans do. Is Europe going to embrace Facebook's Ray-Ban smart glasses? Yes or no? Levin?
Nuts.
What'd you say?
Nuts. Like your general in 1944 in the Bastogne battle set.
Yes. Nuts. Okay. Nuts.
Matt, you're a pretty stylish guy. Are you going to be first in line for the Facebook glasses?
Well, I actually wear Ray-Bans. The glasses I've got on at the moment are Ray-Bans. So, you know, it's kind of, it sounds like an upgrade, but I don't think I'll be upgrading.
Oh, I don't know. That sounds like a maybe, Matt. That sounds like a maybe.
Joel just loves the VR.
Just the privacy implications of letting Mark Zuckerberg look through my eyes is a bit too much for me.
Oh, you're so naive.
Joel just wants to play Fortnite and not look like an idiot.
I can't even spell Fortnite correctly. Ask my son. Well, let's talk about travel real quick, Chad, because you and I are still scheduled to be in Europe on Thanksgiving, which is a little bit offensive to an American like me, but I'm still on schedule to be there Thanksgiving Day in some Bayside town in Belgium. Levin, you can give us some specifics on what's going on, but Chad and Cheese will be in Europe in November.
Ah, I get to promote my Congress again. Nice, nice. November 25th, we have the e-recruitment Congress. As I said, last edition of the show. It's in Austin, Belgium. It's a whole day of recruitment technology, 3 keynotes, 12 breakout sessions. If you want to stay in the know, then you come to the Congress.
Love it. And if there are no other shout outs, let's get to the news, shall we?
Topics!
All right. Google's been naughty, you guys. This is from a huge story in The Guardian, in case you want to Google it and find out more. Google has been illegally underpaying thousands of temporary workers in dozens of countries and delayed correcting the pay rates for more than 2 years as it attempted to cover up the problem. Documents uncovered by The Guardian show Big G dragged its feet to correct disparity after learning it was failing to comply with laws in the UK, Europe, and Asia. Google execs have been aware since at least May of 2019 that the company was failing to comply with local laws. Of the top 7 countries affected, all but one is European, and the UK, having the most contract workers at Google, are affected the most. Given the high turnover rate of temporary workers, the number of workers affected by Google's failure is estimated to be in the tens of thousands. Well, let's start with the representative from the UK. Matt, what is Google doing? It's pretty bloody bad, isn't it?
It is pretty bloody bad. That's certainly a way of describing it. I think what's interesting here is it really underlines the complexity of employment law and labor laws across the world, and you know that complexity is essentially what they're hiding behind. And big implications for what they and other large companies might be, you know, trying to conceal and not deal with. But also on the flip side, I think it's interesting that, you know, sometimes we talk about global talent pools and recruiting people all around the world as if it's a really, really easy thing to do. Mm-hmm. And I think this just kind of really underlines the complexity of, you know, running a global business.
Yeah, but you can't tell me that Google doesn't have an army of accountants and lawyers who knew this was happening. I mean, especially in companies with pay parity laws. Now, maybe 10 years ago, but they're much more mature globally. So, yeah, they're hiding behind shit. But the big question for me is, which country is actually going to slam the hammer down on Google with a real fine and not just some pittance? Because we've seen countries hit Google and Facebook with small fines. And all that really does is send a signal to all the other companies out there saying, okay, yeah, no, that's affordable. I can pay that tax.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, some context for Americans. There are more than 30 countries, including the UK, many EU states in India and Taiwan that have enacted these pay parity laws, which are basically equal treatment laws that require temporary workers to be treated equally to full-time employees who perform the same or similar work. So to Chad's point, you know, I really think that particularly in big tech where there are global businesses, like whether it's Facebook combating, you know, facial recognition issues here in the US or whether it's Google fighting media in Australia and other parts of the world, I think that the accountants get in the room and say, okay, let's do an analysis on what it's going to cost us to, you know, take this back to court, to pay the fines, to bend the law, file another appeal, et cetera. Basically, time this out as much as we can until we have to pay a $10 million fine, a $100 million fine. I think Google's highest is in the billions, which is still sort of couch cushion money for them. And by the time they've, you know, by the time they have appealed these laws, you know, their stock is up 40%, which makes it much easier to pay the piper, if you will. So the math and the algorithm on these fines and these legal issues with Google and other tech companies, to me, is just a math problem to them. And unless a country comes in with like a huge, huge, huge fine, nothing is ever going to change. This is just going to be the way it is.
I think that's an interesting point because it's kind of like how big is a huge fine? Because, you know, a huge fine for, you know, for the likes of Google and Facebook and these other companies is just vast. I mean, I was just looking back to see who'd been fined in the UK for sort of various things, and I found that, you know, Facebook were fined £500,000 for Cambridge Analytica harvesting data in 2019. Yeah. £500,000. I mean, that's just a rounding error, isn't it?
And my guess is there are probably limits to how much a fine can be in a lot of European countries. Whereas in America, it's a very litigious culture. You can sue everybody for anything and you could probably win tons of money. But my guess is, I don't know, I'm not a judicial expert, but my guess is a lot of these countries probably have limits or rules around how much a fine can be for certain crimes. And that dollar amount is probably nothing, you know, to what these companies earn in revenue.
Oh, yeah. Well, take a look at just the revenue in the U.S. It's like $161 billion. And that was from a couple of years ago. To be able to take a serious chunk out of that, billions of dollars out of that, is when they start to actually notice. And then they will change behavior. But you know the U.S. is not going to do that, right? So, you know, back to Matt and to Levin, do you think that any of the EU at all, any of the countries within EU, have the brass balls to actually smack Google hard enough for them to actually give a shit?
Well, I'm pretty sure they will someday.
no time soon.
Maybe the successor of Angela Merkel will in Germany.
Whoever that might be, yeah.
But our money's on France.
To me, it's strange that there is no such thing in the US as equally pay. I mean, it's all about women and men getting paid equally and about racial stuff, etc.
Yeah.
But in my opinion, it's normal that temporary workers should be treated equally to full-time employees.
Yes.
Why isn't it the case in the US? It's weird.
Yes, because of margins. It's very simple. In the U.S., we are very focused on one thing, the almighty dollar. That's for the past at least 50 years. That's what the focus has been.
Yeah, but I mean, why just don't pay them all less?
Well, I think a lot of it is, you know, like we treat small businesses differently than we do bigger businesses. And so if you have a certain amount of workers, are they full-time workers? Are they part-time? Then you have to pay them health insurance, which I think is probably where this the answer really lies, is that the line at which someone has to pay health benefits is usually dependent upon how many full-time workers they have, and they don't have to pay full-time workers health insurance. So there tends to be more healthcare or more temporary workers or part-time workers because of that. So a lot of it, I think, is limits on at what point do you have to start paying? At what point do you come under regulations that make it harder to do business? And in America, we try to put people in pockets to where we don't have to pay health benefits. We don't have to pay other benefits and other things. So my short answer is I think a lot of it stems through our healthcare system.
Yeah. And the things that you guys automatically have embedded into everyday work life, which is what we don't.
But I'm working for the damping industry, so I'm a bit biased here. We get, for us, it's much better if everyone gets paid equally, of course.
Yes.
And it wasn't like that some years ago. So we changed to, but I think for the company culture, it must be devastating if you have two types of employees. Let's say we have an A type, our own employees, and we pay them well and we give them benefits. And then you have the B type, which are temporary workers. It's crushing for the company spirit. Oh, but you're a temporary guy. Okay, go away.
I think we've always done it that way, and we probably don't see it the same way.
Maybe.
Because of margins. Matt?
Just on that fine and which country, this is what the EU's for. The EU as an entity is big enough to go after Google. So it would be interesting to see what happens at that kind of EU level.
Do you think there's too much bureaucracy that would actually have to happen between all those different countries to be able to smack Google that hard? Or do you think that it was pulled together nimble enough to be able to actually do something like this?
Well, that's the question. Okay. I don't know the answer, but I suspect you're right.
I think I'd put my money on France in this case.
Yeah.
They'll be the first to try to get some money out of Google.
Some real money.
Yeah. Give it a try.
Europe has a bunch of countries in it.
Everyone deserves their best job. That's what Fiji stands for. We make a big difference for independent recruiters with the strength of our fast-growing recruiter network. At Fiji, you can be your best self and work for the company you'd like whenever and wherever. We support you with the best digital and online recruitment marketing. We offer professional business development support, recruitment specialist training, and a bit of rebellious network meetings. Let's join strengths and help more professionals find the job they love. Celebrate recruitment and join Fiji at FYGI.NL.
So we talk a lot on the weekly show about California's Prop 22, which would mean gig workers on platforms like Uber and DoorDash will have to be treated like employees. Hundreds of millions have been spent on media campaigns by said platforms to make sure the proposition doesn't become law. But in Europe, we have our first examples of giggers as employees. In Spain, after less than a month of debate, the Spanish Congress approved the Riders Law, which presumes riders to be employees. The response from platforms shouldn't surprise anyone. Deliveroo announced it was ending operations in Spain, which will result in more than 3,000 riders losing their jobs. Glovo, the largest delivery platform in Spain, indicated it would only hire a relatively small part of its workforce, 2,000 out of the 12,000. Uber Eats has reached agreements to subcontract its riders from third-party distributors, essentially washing its hands of a direct relationship. Meanwhile, in Amsterdam, nearly 4,000 Uber drivers are now considered employees. The judge who ruled said, quote, real self-employed workers can determine their own rate and determine how they carry out their work. This is not the case with drivers who drive for Uber, end quote. As a result of the ruling, Uber must place its drivers on the payroll and pay according to the collective labor agreement for taxi transport. Shockingly, Uber will appeal the ruling. In the UK, Uber has already been defeated three times until the British Supreme Court finally settled the dispute earlier this year. About 70,000 British drivers are now entitled to the minimum wage, paid holidays, and other protections. And in Belgium, the Belgian Taxi Federation filed a lawsuit against Uber because it is a, quote, hidden taxi service. What a mess, guys. Let's dig into this. Matt, it seems the Brits have accepted this fate. How'd they pull that one off?
Well, it's interesting, and it's something that's been rumbling on for quite some time. So, February, it was kind of ruled that the Uber drivers are entitled to workers' workers' rights. So that's things like holiday, sick pay, all those kind of things. Interestingly, and apologies if I got this wrong, because it's a very fast-moving thing. So my understanding is Deliveroo are exempt from that at the moment. So if you're a gig taxi driver, then you get they have to give you employment rights. If you're a gig delivery, food delivery driver or biker or whatever, then they don't. So Uber taxi drivers get employment rights, but Uber Eats drivers don't. Yeah, it's interesting. It's an ongoing, there's lots of kind of ongoing court cases and arguments and counter arguments around it. But I think the direction of travel is very, very clear in terms of, more employment rights for gig workers.
Yes, yes. Well, and here's what I think is important from the article. Quote, the employment relationship in the end is who owns the digital tool. As long as Glovo owns the application and its algorithm, which are the means to connect clients and riders and calculate the prices of the delivery, even if these can be slightly adjusted, there will be subordination and thus an employment relationship. That to me, whoever owns the tech in this case, which means you can't subcontract this shit, you can't do anything outside the lines, which it sounds like Uber and some of these companies are going to try to do, but it doesn't sound like they're going to be able to because they own the tech.
So to me, one of the things that stood out from this variety of stories is when I think about how who would most mirror America, it's the Spain response. If this ever became law in the U.S., you would see companies pull out of certain states. You would see third parties come in to alleviate sort of the direct relationship. We would do everything possible to skirt the law. And we see this in the trucking industry here because, today when someone goes through trucking school and they get their license, they get the opportunity to either be a full-time employee or be their own driver. And they are highly encouraged to be their own boss, to have their own truck, to which they get their own LLC. They get their own truck, which then they have to pay money on, and then they invoice the trucking company and become their own basically company. America is going to skirt this as much as possible if it becomes law. Although I think there's a culture here of sort of rugged independence that this isn't going to happen other than states like California, Washington, New York, maybe. But I think the Spain example is what really stood out to me. It sounds like from Matt's comment in the UK, to me, it sounds like the taxi union is just a lot stronger than the other union for Uber Eats or whatever it was. And that's why that became the situation in the UK. Am I off base on that or am I right on?
It's something to do. There's a technicality about whether you can substitute riders. So there's kind of a legal kind of loophole around it. Mm-hmm. I think Deliveroo went public in the UK actually a few months ago. I can't
remember. Deliveroo is based in the UK, right?
Yeah. So interestingly, Deliveroo has gone, is going for an IPO. And so there was there might be question marks about the UK government's hand in this in terms of, a US company, having to abide by employment law, but a UK one. Not having to. So I don't know. It's interesting.
Am I right in saying that the taxi union or there's a taxi union in the UK and it's probably really strong and influential?
There's lots of things going on. So it varies from city to city. Okay. So taxis are licensed on a kind of a city basis. So what we were finding before this ruling was that the rules for Uber were different in different UK cities. So at one point Uber lost its license completely in London because of some of its working practices, but it appealed it and got it back. Yep. And then Uber in other British cities has to work a slightly different way. So it's not kind of one all-powerful union. It's lots of different kind of regulations. And it's because taxis are licensed by the local government or the city council effectively. And Uber are constantly arguing that they're not a taxi service, and that's kind of what it comes down to. Obviously, in London, you've got the black cabs who mm-hmm. have been very very vocal in their opposition to Uber,
sure.
And they have to abide by a number of rules and regulations, and Uber didn't. So it's kind of an argument that's been sort of happening on a city by city basis in terms of whether Uber is a taxi service and should be licensed accordingly. And the employment workers' rights thing is actually almost a separate national issue about the definition of the gig economy and who's actually an employed worker and who's just a contractor or yeah. someone using a platform to find bits and pieces of work.
So Leven, as our token Belgian, do you have a take on the Taxi Federation's lawsuit? Does the taxi union have a really strong presence in Belgium? What's your take on their case?
Well, they succeeded in blocking Uber for quite a long time. When I go to Paris, because we've got offices in Paris, we always take Uber. But in Belgium, we used to take taxis until very recently. It was just illegal to take an Uber. And there have been some cases. Matt said something about taxi drivers being vocal. That's still okay. In Belgium, they were pretty aggressive, not only vocal. The taxi driver called an Uber, and when the Uber guy came, they kicked his ass until all Uber drivers gave up.
Wow, that sounds like olden days kind of union disputes
the
and shit.
The mean streets of Belgium.
The scabs, baby. They put the scabs in. So here's a question. Now that these individuals are employees, how do you know if they're not gaming the system and running like all three different apps? And is it okay? Just as long as you log enough time per app. I mean, this starts to create different rules in the gigging landscape, right? So what does that mean? Do we know?
I think that's interesting. And these are relatively new rulings. This is not over yet. This is going to run and run. It'll be interesting to see how it pans out, but this will be back in the courts before too long.
And we'll be watching. All right, guys, let's get to a startup in the UK. Matt, this is in your lane. We customize our shows for our guests, if you didn't know that. So UK-based rec tech startup Applied, known for its unbiased hiring service, has introduced a job board feature to build up its database of applicants. Founded in London in 2015, Applied replaces resumes with assessments and provides end-to-end recruitment services to employers and recruiters. Applied has raised around $6.6 million US so far. In addition to not requiring gender, age, ethnicity, and other characteristics when applying, the solution also considers other ATS-led data science for anonymous skill-based hiring. Applied says predictive validity of its work sample tests, structured interviews, and cognitive ability tests are far better than the old school resume-based shortlisting approach based on education, reference checks, and years of experience. Listeners might remember Junco raising $10 million, the acquisition of Diversity Jobs by Circa, and the merger of WayUp and Yellow. So is diversity recruiting here to stay? Or will it eventually go the way of Facebook's new Ray-Bans? Matt, another UK story, baby. What are your thoughts?
Absolutely. You cover it all on this show, don't you? Everything from I wish I'd researched a UK city taxi licensing before I came on, and I could have given you a more definitive answer.
I'm kind of glad that you didn't, to be quite frank.
And so are the listeners.
Yes.
I was recording another podcast. I just didn't have time.
No worries.
I've not come across this particular solution before. It sounds interesting. Obviously, there is huge investment in these kind of tools going on all over the world at the moment. Like with anything, I would be interested in case studies and how that's worked in practice. One of the things that worries me slightly about the proliferation of, investment in tools in the front end of the funnel is organizations thinking they can solve diversity in their company by ticking a box and buying a technology solution rather than addressing it much more strategically and looking at equity and inclusion and everything across their business. So I'm not familiar with the organization. I'd be very interested to find out more, but I would hope that this was a tool that was used as part of a much broader corporate strategy rather than looking at it as a tick box or a silver bullet.
Yeah, DEI is fashion forward, baby. It's the new AI. Everybody's doing it. US-based Canvas today actually announced they received $50 million in funding with a valuation of $400 million. There's nothing more sexy than DEI right now, kids. Companies
are cash.
That's what I'm saying. They're getting cash because they know that there are more restrictions. SEC just actually made some changes to reporting information. So instead of just reporting in the US, what your workforce, the number of employees you have in your workforce, they're starting to focus on diversity as well. So workforce composition, what do you need? You need platforms that focus on diversity to actually get them into your organization, not to mention also analytics, so on and so forth. But there are a few things that we have to focus on. Number one, companies who have been putting on a good show, like they always have, waving the diversity banner, saying they love diversity with no hiring outcomes, shitty retention, or no promotions of underrepresented individuals, they're the ones who are clamoring to buy something quick. And they feel like it's a silver bullet, like I think Matt was talking about. And none of this is, because it's all about the company, the practices, and the purpose that they're putting out there. So, this is, I think it's awesome for Applied. I'm not a big believer in their tech. There are some holes in it, but I would love to see it, get a demo of it. But overall, man, DEI is it.
Yeah, I think I like to say on the show that the answer to all of your questions is money. Not only money going into these companies, but budgets being allocated at companies to buy products and services and to hypercharge activities at companies and initiatives to actually see change at organizations. And certainly, my question, I guess, would be certainly in the States, we've had a long, complicated history with slavery and race relations with Europe, which Europe hasn't quite had the same amount of complications or history. So for us, I think there's a lot of this being really important and really a focal point for organizations and our country. I'm curious from the Europeans on the show, how important is it? Is it as important in their world as it probably is in ours? I mean, George Floyd was killed in Minnesota, and I know that the echoes of that went around the world, but I don't know to what degree it is in Europe. So I'd love some sort of color around that from our Europeans.
I think it's less important still than it is in the US, and it's kind of being forced upon us from the US. But there are many differences between the eastern part of Europe and the western part. Mm-hmm. We in the western part feel it's important and we should be doing something with it, and we are slowly getting there. But in the more Eastern European countries, people just don't take it. They don't want it. And each company should be able to decide for themselves. That's what they feel, to hire who they want. And it's getting even more right-wing than it's going towards DEI.
Interesting. When you say forced on you by America or America's companies?
Both. I think it's the public opinion is slowly getting steered by, you call it Californication. That's really...
That's an interesting way of putting it. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. So you believe a lot of your diversity initiatives are being driven by the US?
I think so, yeah.
It's incredibly important in the UK and has been for, you know, has been for a number of years, but has obviously been particularly amplified in the last couple of years. But it's something every single employer is looking at very, very carefully and very, very strategically and trying to do better. Are they addressing it properly and solving the problems? Probably not, but in terms of the way it's talked about and how seriously it's taken, it's incredibly important.
Are you seeing budgets allocated in with UK companies?
Yeah.
Like it absolutely. Is here?
Yeah.
Okay.
Dude, fashion forward. The only thing I've gotta say is that any hiring company who wants to stamp out bias and they think tech is the answer, they're going to be wrong. They've got to get an expert in there. It's just like the tech stack. It's a part of the tech stack. You've got to get in there, focus on process methodologies. You've got to focus on job descriptions, the very basics of what we've been doing wrong for decades. Hell, that's what we have to do. We can't think that the silver bullet's going to get it done. So we have to use these tools in the right way. And that the only way we do that is to get experts in the room to be able to help us do that, to navigate through and get these hires, better retention and promotions in the organization.
Amen. Well, I learned a lot today. I hope you guys did and our listeners did too. Big thanks to Matt, that British guy, Alder, for joining us. Matt, where can listeners find out more about you?
You can find me on LinkedIn, obviously, but you can find my podcast at recruitingfuture.com.
Awesome. Boys, another one in the books. We out.
We out.
Thank you for listening to, what's it called? A podcast. The Chad. The Cheese. Brilliant. They talk about recruiting. They talk about technology. But most of all, they talk about nothing. Just a lot of shout-outs of people you don't even know. And yet, you're listening. It's incredible. And not one word about cheese. Not one. Cheddar. Blue. Nacho, Pepper Jack, Swiss. So many cheeses and not one word. So weird. Anywho, be sure to subscribe today on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. That way you won't miss an episode. And while you're at it, visit www.chadcheese.com. Just don't expect to find any recipes for grilled cheese. It's so weird. We out.
How much do you understand the future of finance? I'm Jim Roos, a top 10 banking influencer and host of the podcast Banking Transformed, where we dive deeply into the rapidly evolving world of banking and financial technology. Join me as I interview industry experts, thought leaders, and innovators as they unravel the latest banking trends, disruptions, and game-changing technologies reshaping the world of finance. Redefine your understanding of the banking ecosystem. Subscribe now to Banking Transformed, available wherever you get your podcasts, and now available on YouTube.